It's Sunday Morning with David Grossman, covering the biggest stories in high school, college, and university sports on The Fan 590.
.802 on The Fan 590, or make that 2 minutes after 8 o'clock on this holiday weekend and Sunday morning with me, David Grossman. Well, the summer's gone. School starts in, a couple hours, a few days. Pick it. And for those folks who missed our season opener last week, yes, we are now 2 hours. Lots to talk about on high school and college, university, grassroots sport, anything that carries the label of amateur, and I'll leave that for you to determine. 8 to 10 every Sunday morning as we are here, and very interesting feedback from a lot of our listeners. They've enjoyed the format, and that's exactly why we're here. And parents, just want to remind you that your children, that's right, your children are the ones playing sports when they go back to school, and are you happy with their coaches? Do you actually care? And some schools don't even have teams. They don't even have sports. Or my favorite, cheerleaders. It's like extinct, gone. They don't care about them anymore. And how about the stress that some coaches and schools put on these youngsters, especially some of them playing sport for the first time, to win and win and win, when it should be more of a learning opportunity? I guess the best one that I like is how some of these fifth-year students return to school, supposedly for academics, but we all know it's for sports. And as soon as the sports season is over, they suddenly disappear. I guess they've learned enough, and that's time to move on. So there are all kinds of issues and concerns in the world of school sports, and a lot of discrepancies as well that appear, particularly around the age bracket. And what I found fascinating was a story that surfaced just recently in Florida of a 21-year-old football player, 21 years old, and he's posing as a 14-year-old. No one said a word, not even a peep. And he changed his name, and get this, his real name is Julius Threats. I'm not kidding. His real name, Julius Threats. And it gets better. He forged a birth certificate, and he also had something like a past burglary conviction on his record. But he was playing sports with 14-year-olds. So coach's suggestion is, as you get back into the school season, check your player's age out before the entire team ends up paying the price, and you end up looking like a nincompoop with the usual excuse, I didn't know, nobody told me, it's not my fault. Anyway, I caught the openers of some of the NCAA games this week. Talk about crowds, big ones, lots of excitement. And then we have to, back here, compare it to something called the OUA. And I just can't wait for tomorrow when the University of Guelph visits York University for York's season opener. And I will prepare myself, I really will, with lots of caffeine before the game, because it's not going to be one of those pretty ones. In fact, the OUA doesn't even have York listed on its website in the standings, which probably says something. I don't know. Joining us first off to talk a little about university sport is Nate Sager. He covers sports for Yahoo Sports Canada, Buzzing the Net blog, but his real sporting passions might really be Canadian university football, I guess a little bit of basketball as well, and he's covered each of those sports extensively for CISblog.ca and streaming Sports Network Canada. Nate, how you doing?
Good, David. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, do you want to come to Toronto? I'll buy you the entrance ticket. You can sit beside me. We can watch Guelph and York.
No, I think I'll pass on that one.
Why, is something about York or Guelph that you don't like?
No, nothing against those fine institutions. I just think the Western Ottawa on Mondays might be a more watchable game, and it's 10 minutes from my door.
You know, week one is in the book in the OUA, and some people will argue there have been a few surprises, such as the butt-kicking that Laurier got from Western, 46-1, which I think goes down as one of the worst, if not the worst, football game in the history of that university. Were you surprised?
A little bit surprised by the margin, and I believe it was the most one-sided win Western has ever had over Laurier. But Laurier, I mean, people were saying, you know, they got pushed around a bit in that game. I mean, Western did have a benefit of a preseason game, maybe to just, you know, get up to game speed, but that was a bit of a surprise that Western was able to physically push Laurier around like that. That has not happened in a long, long time.
You look at the roster of the Golden Hawks, and they are loaded with talent. A lot of kids from the Greater Toronto area as well, and there are some people who think the coaches didn't really have this team prepared. Is there such a thing as that?
There can be. I mean, I think coaching means so much in collegiate football, especially in the first game in the OUA. I mean, it is such a moving target because you don't know what other teams have for personnel. You don't know what the new schemes they've integrated in over the summer. It's a real guessing game. And I guess Laurier lost like that on Wednesday. It's going to be interesting to see what happens to them against McMaster, because McMaster has got really banged up in their win over Queens. So we could have a bit of a paper, rock, scissors scenario with Laurier, McMaster, and Western this year. You know, one beats one, the other beats the other, and so forth.
You know, I'm not going to pick on Laurier, but last point worth noting, Laurier had 157 yards of offense in their opener, as compared to the U of T here that had 171. First time Toronto got more offense than Laurier. Granted, different teams. And when we look at it that way, here are the Blues sailing along in Guelph. I was watching the game. They could have had a victory, but 6 seconds went by. Guelph had marched the ball down something like 70 yards, kicked a field goal, and boom, U of T was back in the losing column again. What do you think the situation is for the University of Toronto Blues as they play Windsor in a game tomorrow night at 7 o'clock? They host them in the home opener.
Toronto, from what we've seen the last couple of years under Greg DeLavelle, Toronto's really made progress. I mean, I think as Greg DeLavelle pointed out light last week, they were in 6 of 8 games last year, whereas in the past they were, you know, 30, 40-point blowouts. They just haven't been able to score. They're sort of in the same situation as the team they're playing tomorrow night, Windsor. They've got a decent enough defense that they can stay in games. They just can't score any points. And that, well, you saw it on Wednesday, and I didn't have that ability. But they were in a situation where they were down 2 points. They got down to, they were, you know, inside the 5-yard line. They score a touchdown. They win the game. Instead, they have to settle for a field goal. Guelph comes back and kicks one of their own to win it. So I mean, they're getting better. They don't quit in games. They're not giving up, you know, 60-70 points, but it's still a long road back to being a playoff team for Toronto, and they probably needed to get that one if they were going to satisfy anyone's prediction that they might sneak into the playoffs this year.
Nate, they were on the 1-yard line with first down. They didn't get over.
Yeah.
Second down from the 1-yard line, didn't get over. Had to settle for a field goal, and everybody had their eyes closed because they thought, based on the way U of T was playing, they were going to miss the field goal as well. You know,
yeah,
in
Canadian football, you can't not have a touchdown when you're on the goal, first and goal from the one, unless you're Western in last year's Yates Cup.
When we talk about U of T and York here, two of the largest universities in the country, large, I guess, student enrollments, shouldn't be difficult getting a football team, and a credit to, as you mentioned, Greg DeLaval to try rebuild this program. But some people are getting a little restless over at York. They have their fourth head coach in the past 5 years, and they brought in Michael Faulds, that some people know a little about as the top university quarterback when he played at Western. And yet these two universities just can't seem to buy a victory. What is it about them? Do you think it's time for them to throw in the programs?
No, I don't think it's time to throw in the programs, but Simpsons episode, Flanders Parents, we've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It might be time to, I always wondered why Toronto doesn't look at copying the Lavelle model, to be honest. I mean, I know that would be completely a foreign concept maybe to the current athletic administration, but, you know, the definition of insanity is to keep doing it the same way and getting a different result, and they need to come up with something different. And I think David Naylor at the Globe and Mail's pointed out, I mean, there's been a sort of a big, you know, renaissance at the grassroots of football in the Toronto area. At some point, you'd think the two, you know, football-playing universities would be able to tap into that. York situation, I mean, it's tough. I mean, you know, you watched the LSU game last night. You think there's a traditional power. Mm-hmm. I mean, tradition, you know, having that tradition counts so much, and that's the thing that York has never had. I mean, they've always been sort of, you know, mediocre, you know, bottom tier team, and it's sort of tough when you don't have that culture of winning to build up to it. Other than the Andre Dury years, they really haven't ever been a good team. So I don't know how you solve that at York, but I mean, maybe they get new facilities and have something to offer to recruits to convince them to stay home, and it's doable. It's not I don't think you're ever at the point where you just say quit.
Our guest this morning, Nate Sager with Yahoo Sports Canada. Well, they're going to get a new facility at York in time for the Pan Am Games. But, I mean, every year the same message comes from the administrations. We're getting better. We're going to recruit. It takes some time. How do you tell that to people, especially at York, when you're on a 20-game losing streak? You've had these, I mean, 40-game losing streaks plus at both U of T and York, and they just don't draw any fans. The kids don't want to play there. I mean, half of the team at Queen's University won the Vanier Cup is from the Greater Toronto Area, and you put the question right to them, and they say they just wanted to get out of town, and you push it even more, and they say they really don't want to play for two teams that are not successful. So I don't know what the answer is. I mean, do you just grab kids, shut down, have a draft of some sort?
You wish that you could, but, ask what Queens did 10 years ago. I mean, I covered Queens one season where they won one game by 1 point and got blown out by 60 by Laurier, got blown out by 45 by Ottawa. So they were at a point where there were people looking around wondering, like, you know, will we still see a team at Queens in, like, 2015? And here they are as now the defending national champions. I mean, it'll take them a few years to get back to the peak that they hit last year. But, I mean, they definitely looked at how they ran their program. I mean, they invested in having a second full-time coach, which is something schools have to have now.
I just don't understand what U of T has to do. They got a fabulous facility. I mean, it's got to be one of the nicest in the country. At the same time, they've got a coaching staff that's been there for a couple of years. They're trying to rebuild with recruiting. They have the support, financial support of the administration. You hear these excuses, academics at U of T. Well, you know what? Academics at Queens isn't that bad either, or at McGill, or you go right across the country at some of them. They got 4 wins in their last 80 games or 81 games. And now York, I mean, I had a woman call me up this week. She was just ripping me for the story we had in the Toronto Star, pointing out the concerns about York and U of T. And she said, well, you failed to mention that York was 6-2 in 1 year, and they did make it to the playoffs. Well,
no, they weren't 6-2. It was 5-3.
There you go. And they did make it to the playoffs once. And she talked about them being ranked 5th in the world or something like that. It's a sad state. It really is when you look at it and you say, why can't Toronto produce good university football teams?
Well, I'm not a smart enough sports sociologist, but there's no major college football team in like downtown New York City either. So maybe it's something about, maybe it's just a game that's geared more towards that school. It's in a small college town, a place like Kingston or London.
All right. Well, I'm going to ask you, let's predict some results of this coming games, 4 games scheduled on the for tomorrow. And Guelph will take that 1-0 record. They could be the winningest team in OUA this year if they beat York tomorrow and everybody else loses. Anyway, they play York. What do you think is going to happen?
Guelph should be able to get that 2-0 start, which I believe is the same 2-0. I think that was their first 2 wins of last season were over Toronto and York as well. So, I mean, they have definitely slipped, but I don't know if they've slipped that far.
Well, Stu Lang is their head coach, and he's a great guy, absolutely great guy. But they got a quarterback in there who was riding the bench last year, Chris Rossetti, who had transferred from Laurier, didn't play a full game, and here he is now as the starter, and they did not look pretty at all. I mean, they are not the same Guelph teams in past. And here's something, I don't know if you knew this or not, Nate, but the last 3 years, those two teams, Guelph and York only was able to produce 17 points in 3 games, 17 points. But it was 4 years ago that they did beat Guelph, 22-15. So who knows? You say Guelph will beat York.
Yeah, well, 17 points, really.
That's right.
Well, not Queens Jimmy Allen had 18 by himself three punt and kick returns last season.
Will it be close, Guelph over York?
I don't see that one being close.
All right. How about Western and Ottawa, two undefeated teams in the nation's capital?
That should be a pretty good game. I mean, the thing right now with Ottawa is they're really depleted at running back. Jordan Wilson-Ross, their leading rusher from last season, is not playing, and Brendan Gallanders, who's supposed to be the other half of their sort of tailback platoon, he got injured after one carry against Windsor. So it depends. It all really depends on what Brad Sinopoli, Ottawa's quarterback, who I believe is the most dynamic offensive talent in the OUA, maybe the whole country. I mean, Greg Marshall actually is called him the most complete package he's seen in university football.
Well, Nate, we got to move along.
Runs wild, Ottawa has a shot, but I think Western wins that.
I'm sorry. We have to move along. I appreciate your time. Laurier plays McMaster.
Problem.
You had mentioned that earlier. Windsor, again, with Toronto, should be interesting games.
Let's take Laurier and Toronto.
There you go. We'll see what happens. We appreciate your time, as always.
All right, thank
you,
David.
A great job. Yahoo Sports Canada, Buzzing the Net blog. Nate Sager joining us from Ottawa. We're going to take a break. When we come back, schedule up is the director of the Toronto Catholic District School Board. I'll be fine. This is Sunday Morning with David Grossman on the Fan 590.
It's Sunday Morning with David Grossman, covering the biggest stories in high school, college, and university sports on the Fan 590.
Welcome back. It's David Grossman, as a nice gentleman had said before. 22 minutes after 8 o'clock. And if you're just about ready to step outside, you don't want to do what I did this morning, wear a pair of shorts. It was 8 degrees. I knew there was a problem when I saw icicles on the cat's whiskers. But it was a little chilly for so early in September. But it'll warm up, they tell me that. Either that or I got to find a pair of jeans very quickly. It's time for Sunday Morning with David Grossman's bonus code. Yeah, my bonus code. No, the bonus code. Fan Club members, you can enter the bonus code at ARGO, that's right, A-R-G-O, before 9:50 today at fan590.com for 590 points. And it's your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Argos play the Winnipeg Blue Bombers next Sunday, September the 19th at the Rogers Centre. So that code again was A-R-G-O, ARGO. Visit fan590.com and enter it in the fan club for your chance to win now. And, of course, we're going to announce a winner later on in the show. Well, I guess I should take a minute to extend a Happy New Year to our Jewish listeners, because Wednesday night is the startup of the holiday called Rosh Hashanah. So for all our listeners and, of course, my family as well, the very best of the holiday season to them. As mentioned, we were going to talk to Ann Parent, the director of the Toronto District Catholic School Board, and then Richard Jung. But what we're going to do is flip them around a bit because we can't seem to locate Ann. So Richard joining us right now. He's a 17-year-old student who, well, shall we say he likes to use the four-letter word quite a bit. And that four-letter word I'm talking about is golf. He's the best for his age in this country after winning the Canadian Junior Boys National title recently on the West Coast in Richmond, British Columbia. Richard, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, explain to me, here's this kid who comes to Toronto, born, what, in Seoul, South Korea?
Yeah.
Came to Toronto about 10 years ago, and you suddenly emerged as the number one golfer for a 17-year-old in this country. Did it happen overnight?
No, it definitely took hard work. Definitely took a lot of reps and time, too.
Your goal, like I guess every young athlete, whether it's basketball wanting to make it to the NBA or football to the NFL or CFL, your goal is to make it to the PGA and the tour. Realistically, is that something that is possible, or is that just words that are ripping out of your mouth?
Well, anything can happen, right? So I'm just going to work hard, like harder, until I reach that goal, and yeah, that's about it. I don't think about the negative side. Just always think positive and then just look forward.
A kid your age, Richard, how often would you get an opportunity to actually get out in the golf course, or for that matter, just practice or play?
Well, I practice and play every day.
Really?
Yes.
So what happens now when school starts in a couple of days? You went to Northview secondary school, which I guess has a gifted program for athletes here in Toronto. Do you go back? Have you graduated? What's the situation with you when it comes to academics?
I have four or five more credits left. And last year, I actually took a year off because I wanted to, you know, focus on golf and stuff. And then last year, I actually decided I didn't want to go to university and then just kind of drop out. And then just practice all winter, just like every day.
You have a choice to make, I understand, on whether or not to finish your high school, I guess, education this year, or to possibly to turn pro. Is that a fair assumption? And can you turn pro at age 17? Is that realistic?
Well, you can do that, but I'm not going to do that right now. And I will finish my high school.
And after that, what are the plans when you finish Northview? Are you wanting to take some time off to continue golf? Do you want to get your education at university in Canada? What's the interest like in the U.S. or is there any interest scholarship wise?
Well, I actually got a bunch of offers from university down in the States, but just didn't really hit me. You know, I just wasn't interested.
Was golf the number one sport for you as a kid when you were growing up here in Canada? Is that something that interested you more so than shall we say, basketball? And what role did your parents play? Or were they just as surprised as you were at the success that you gradually learned and developed?
Yeah, well, when I grew up, I actually played every kind of sport. You know, I used to play like a little bit of hockey, basketball, soccer, you know, baseball, everything. But you know, just golf was my passion, you know. And my parents were surprised that, you know, I was able to pick up the game pretty quickly.
People listening in right now, and we should mention Richard Jung is joining us, a 17-year-old student, Northview Heights here in Toronto, and a very, very good golfer. When I say very good, well, he's a national champion, the Canadian Junior, held out in Richmond, British Columbia. People are wondering, when it comes to high school golf, is it fair for somebody as talented as you to be competing with other high school kids who may not be as successful or as good as you?
I don't know what to say about that, you know.
Well, honestly, to give us your honest opinion, I believe you finished third at the OFSA championships a couple of years ago, and here you are a national champion.
To be honest, when I came third that year, our team won the OFSA, but, team was kind of unfair. We had three guys on the national team and one girl on the national team.
So the overall, I guess, question would be, how can the school system allow students who are exceptional athletes, which you are, compete against other students who are just learning the game or competing just for fun?
Well, we didn't really have, you know, kids weren't really interested in golf in Northview. So, high school golf isn't really big here. Well, I believe.
And why is that?
I don't know. It's just not recognized, you know?
Richard Jung, your plans coming up, I understand, take you outside of this country. I understand you're competing in the Duke of York Invitational, which is in England. Is that later on this week?
Yeah, I'm leaving this Saturday. Next Saturday, I guess.
Next Saturday to head out. Have you been there before? Have you competed against golfers in that part of the world?
Yeah, well, last year I went to the same tournament. That was in Scotland last year.
So you do a fair amount of traveling.
I do, yes.
What about after the Duke of York? What are the plans there? The golf season obviously has to travel to a warmer climate, or do you...
Well, I just got invited to two more tournaments in Argentina in November.
Go ahead.
So I just, you know, got to get ready for that.
Do you have a role model? Is there somebody in golf? I mean, a lot of kids look up to an individual and say, I like the way he or she plays. Tiger Woods' name gets mentioned a lot of reasons, a lot of times. Is there somebody that you like to fashion yourself after?
Rory McIlroy.
Why?
The way he hits the ball and then the way he handles himself after a bad shot or a good shot, you know, I just love the guy. You know, he's, you know, definitely my role model.
Are there some times when you compete and or even practice where you just get fed up? You just sort of say, you know, there's just too much of this. I've got to take a break. I got to try something different.
I never had that.
Always the feeling to progress and learn. Does your father, does your mother, do they travel with you, or is this something that you do? Do you have a manager or somebody that goes along with you?
Well, some tournaments I travel with the team. That's when my parents don't come, and or if not, I always travel with my dad.
And is your dad a golfer?
He used to be.
there, obviously, is how this whole thing got set up. You've learned from him. He probably took you to different events. How young were you when you first played the sport? Was it 10 when you came here to Canada, or were you playing this back in Korea?
I picked up the game in Canada. I was about 9.
Do you do any teaching? Do you help out young kids who look at you and may want to learn from someone who is a teenager rather than an older individual?
Well, my coach has a bunch of little kids, so I just help them out, you know, just teach them what to do, you know, a little bit of that when I'm not really practicing.
Canadian Junior Boys National Title Champion Richard Jung is on the phone with us now, a 17-year-old who's heading to England this coming Saturday to compete in the Duke of York Invitational and then off to Argentina as well. How do you chill out? I mean, what do you do when you just want to take your mind away from golf? What activities do you get involved in?
I just go out with my friends. You know, just go see a movie or something, you know, just hang out.
Typical teenager stuff with the iPod and all the video games, etc.?
Oh, I don't really play. I don't play video games.
Really?
No.
First individual I've seen who's a teenager doesn't have any video games. golf expectations of taking this. Do you sort of set your goals? Do you see where you're going to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now? I mean, do you sort of say, if I don't reach this, I may have alternative plans, or just keep on whacking it around and say to yourself, I'm going to get there one way or another?
I'm just going to get there one way or another. You know, I'm a person. You know, if I pick one thing, I have to do it, and no matter what, I'm just going to do that.
Were you surprised at Northview on how golf was treated as a sport at your school? I mean, it wasn't compared to the, from what I understand, basketball, volleyball, the primary sports, soccer as well, golf is fairly well down the list. Are you surprised that schools aren't featuring the sport a lot more so?
Well, I guess, because kids aren't really interested, right? They think it's an old man's horse, but it's actually not. They don't know how intense the sport is, but other kids aren't just interested.
What do you mean by that? The kids think it's an old man's sport. There are plenty of opportunities where you see youth, even at the national championships. How do you get young people involved, particularly in a multicultural city like Toronto, in a sport like golf?
I guess they just got to have to do it. Some people are going to have to take them. Or, you know, more commercials, I don't know.
What do you see yourself doing when you're finished school and have golf on the side, Richard? You see, career-wise?
I'm just kind of trying to make a living out of it.
Is there one course that has attracted you more so than others, something you really enjoy playing on, and explain why?
I like wind dance.
And where's that located?
It's in Oxford.
And why?
That's a Greg Norman design. It was created 2007, I believe. You know, it's just really long course, and you can, you know, work on your short game there. You have to, you know, able to create different type of shots.
Winner of the Canadian Junior Boys National title, Richard Jung, on the phone with us now. When you won that title in Richmond, British Columbia, was that? Can you explain a little bit of the jubilation that went along with it? Did you come from behind? Were you leading all along?
I had to lead since the first day.
So this was basically take it for granted from you. It was to maintain your leading role and watch out, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Richard, we appreciate your time this morning. We wish you well and good luck on your trips to England and Argentina, your golf career as well, and hopefully that dream of competing one day on the PGA Tour comes true.
Thank you very much.
Richard Jung, 17-year-old student, a little nervous. I would be too at that age, but here he is, a national champ. Born in Seoul, South Korea. Came here at the age of 7 with his family, learned the golf game and the sport. Father obviously playing a big role. And here he is, a national champion. And great future, I would think. I mean, if you're doing that well at that age, and benefited immensely from the gifted program that was offered to him at Northview Heights Secondary School, which allowed him to not only excel in golf, but get his education at the same time. It works around it. And here he is contemplating now scholarship offers to schools in the U.S., whether it's North Carolina or Toledo, and somehow baking his recipe of success with education and golf and what lies ahead. So great story on Richard Jung. Sure, we're going to hear and see lots of him in the future. We're going to take a break for a sports update, and when we come back, we will have Ann Perrin, the director of the Toronto Catholic District School Board, a very strong supporter of athletics and education. So stay with us. It's Sunday morning on the Fan 590 with David Grossman. Well, I'm taking my time, just moving along. We're back with Sunday morning with David Grossman. 20 minutes to 9 o'clock, and that is me. You're right. I'm not singing. I should. Who knows? Along with an excellent team, Josh Goldsmith, our producer, Joe Cecilia. Gentlemen, thank you very much. And a reminder to you as well, you got a comment, you want to tell us what's on your mind about school sports, university, a couple of the issues that affected you, I don't know, maybe some concerns, the state of sport, drop us an email at sundaymorning@fan590.com. That's sundaymorning@fan590.com, or you can give us a call at 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or cell 590. And coming up later on in the show, Dr. Ellen Yard will join us from Atlanta. She's a researcher with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention about heat-related illnesses affecting teenage athletes. And Rob Ford will join us as well, one of the Mayoralty candidates, a little bit about why he is coaching kids and how important it is to him in his personal life. Pat Rutledge as well, a former high school coach and entrepreneur, and he is... also a former Toronto District School Board trustee as well. And a reminder, fan club members, enter the bonus code ARGO before 9:50 this morning at fan590.com for 590 points. And your chance also to win a pair of tickets to see the Argos play the Bombers next Sunday, September the 19th at the Rogers Centre. So that code again, make a note of it, ARGO, and I'll spell it for you, A-R-G-O. There you go. Visit fan590.com, enter it in the fan club for your chance to win, and to win now. And joining us now, as mentioned, is the director of the Toronto Catholic District School Board, Ann Perrin, who I am told by a lot of people just thrives on supporting athletics and education and is a very strong supporter of the Catholic School Board in this city. Ann, good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing very well this morning.
You know, I was reading all the stuff about you. And I know you're laughing because you're saying, I wonder what he's reading.
That's right.
Well, let me just say that your staff have put together a nice description of you as the director. And I was interested, not only that you're a graduate of the University of Toronto. By the way, do you have any suggestions on how that football team can win a game?
Practice.
Yeah, but they've been practicing for a long time.
Right.
And they're still not winning.
Right. Oh, well, you know, teams, they just have to keep focus on balance in their life and do the best they can and not stress themselves out too much.
You know? There you go.
A little bit too much pressure on winning sometimes.
There you go.
Yeah.
You have a couple of degrees from Brock and also, I think, your master's, right, from OISE?
That's right.
But what I find fascinating is how you continue to benefit from sport, and you are a graduate of Cathedral High School in Hamilton.
Right.
I hear you played basketball.
Oh, absolutely loved it. You know, Hamilton's a big basketball town, and I think basketball really rounded out the holistic experience for me.
More so than volleyball?
Yeah. Volleyball, you know, I like to be active, so I always participated in a sport. But being on the basketball team, you know, you made new friends. It rounded out that experience in a Catholic school, you know, spiritual dimension as well as the athletic and, of course, the academic. So I just thrived on it. It's one of my fondest memories.
Now, was it important to you to win? Was it that trophy and that plaque? I know sport, they always say, well, you compete to win. But was it for you in those days important to win a game or just the camaraderie you had with, I guess, others your age and coaches?
You know, you get a different perspective the older you get. But I remember being involved in the team, and we, generally speaking, got to the playoffs and even the city finals. And so we'd be very disappointed if we didn't at least achieve that goal. I remember it being really important to all of us.
Were you ever athlete of the year?
No.
Okay. Well, let's move on.
I had a great time.
You're director now of one of the largest school boards in this country. And other than the job responsibilities, do you have any specific obligation that you think you owe to the people who, I guess, take the time to volunteer and coach students in your board?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have an awards night where we acknowledge not only the students and the teams. It's quite a powerful evening, but also the coaches. I mean, without coaches and volunteers, there's no way you could provide all that support to the community. I'm aware of many staff members who give up their weekends, countless hours, to coach teams and provide opportunities for students. So, you know, we're very thankful and grateful to our parents and our staff.
Do you get out to see any of these games, whether it's the girls' basketball or anything else that goes on, where you, I mean, get a chance to go by and people actually say, well, there's the director of the board. She's not
actually
sitting in the office.
It's funny you say that. I usually sneak in, and I'm very much unnoticed. I've often gone to track events and seen our students, particularly those from Henry Carr, and just sat right in, you know, with them, and they didn't even know who I was. So it was fabulous.
You mentioned one of the schools, Henry Carr, Michael right. Powers, another one. Startup of school in a couple of days, and I'm sure you're just anxiously waiting for that to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some schools have very, very active varsity sports programs or school programs for teenagers. And others, for boys and girls, I should say, and others, they're just, you never hear from them.
Right.
From our standpoint, we're looking at opportunities to highlight kids and young athletes.
Yes, and you do a great job. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you. But I would like to hear from, I don't want to name some of the schools. Mm-hmm. It's if you're a listener to this station and you read the Toronto Star, you'll see the schools that constantly appear. Mm-hmm. Carr, Power. It's almost like the administrations have said to the coaching staff, before you go home, go to sleep, I want you to promote these kids. And yet other schools, very, very little. Is there something that can be done from your office, or do coaches look at that as extra pressure?
Well, you know, I have to say with our teachers, they're very interested in coaching. So I'd say across the board, there's no lack of engagement upon, you know, on the part of staff. You know, they know that it's part of school life to provide athletic opportunities for students. We've never had any problems. We're ready to go this year. We have all the teams signed up. So I don't know if it's a matter of a profile rather than opportunity, because certainly I'm aware that we provide opportunities for all of our students. So it could be a matter of, I really can't say what it would be a matter of. Maybe it's local papers not picking up stories, because I've heard success stories in all of our schools and various sports. It might be that some sports are a little bit more popular than others.
Joining us is the director of the Toronto Catholic District School Board, Anne Perron, on this holiday weekend. Tragic story. Sad. One of these things that you and I and a lot of people really don't want to hear about, mm-hmm. and that is what happened at Marshall McLuhan mm-hmm. Catholic Secondary last year, where an athlete was playing rugby on the junior boys team, mm-hmm. and the game was against Pope John Paul II. He got hit, he went down, I think it was last April. There were no investigation or no charges laid by police. Do we know the situation, the condition of Wesley Jorish at this time?
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, we've never received confirmation that that particular situation was a result of a sports injury. And the family's wish was to remain private around the medical conditions. So, you know, I can't confirm one way or the other at this time.
And since the publicity, well, now several months ago, a lot of people want to know whatever happened to this young man. There are a lot of concerned people mm-hmm. that care about him, and trying to get that information is very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're able to some way find out or have somebody let us know, we would be more than happy to share that information with our listeners and people who've expressed concern and wanting to donate and do whatever they possibly can to help the Jorish family.
Well, we really appreciate that. I know both schools involved were very upset by the situation, and I just have to respect the family's wishes right now. And we don't have any other, we don't have confirmation that it actually was a result of that particular sports injury.
Can you explain a little bit about what it takes to be a coach in the Toronto Catholic District School Board?
Well, certainly. I think back to my own experience when I coached. You certainly have to be knowledgeable. So if you, for example, I played basketball most of my life, and so I felt fairly confident coaching elementary and secondary high school basketball. But we welcome volunteers to come in to our schools and work with a teacher coach. So we don't have any problem at all with that. We have more than enough people wanting to work with our students.
When you say you invite people to come in and coach, does that individual have to go through a screening process? Do they have to be approved by your office, or is it the approval of the principal of the respective school?
Well, all volunteer coaches have to have a police check, and they're expected to attend seminars regarding expectations of DDCAA, the role, the safety, liability, administrative responsibilities. So they have to be approved, even if they've worked in 09, 10 earlier, they have to be approved again before they can work with our students in 10, 11.
A lot of stories we hear from schools, particularly parents, also some from students as well, that here I am going back to school and I just found out we're not going to be able to have a team, whether it's basketball or volleyball. Why is that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there isn't a teacher wanting to step up and volunteer or someone to stand there and supervise. Is that still the case? Must you have, for liability reasons, or for that matter, for any other reasons, discipline reasons, to supervise a teacher there? Or can, for instance, I want to coach basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Can I come to one of your schools, get approval, and coach basketball?
Yes, we really have that policy of having a teacher as the coach or with the volunteer coach. A teacher must be part of the team. So that's something that we've always done. We don't have a problem, though, with teachers not willing and able to assist us with this. So it's not an issue in our schools.
Do you have sessions with your superintendents, for that matter, even with your principals, on how to deal with specific issues, or do you rely on their administrative support, their leadership skills that they've obviously earned to be in that position? I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, there were a couple of episodes, and these things tend to get in the media, mm-hmm. and for obvious reasons. One involving the football team at Chaminade. There you go.
Yeah.
A situation that happened down in Michigan,
mm-hmm.
Which tarnished the image of the school, and for that matter, the community. A lot of individuals who were not part of that episode. And then we had a situation at James Cardinal McGuigan at the track and field championships,
mm-hmm.
where here is a tremendous performance by a grade 9 kid who went on to win several gold medals at the Ontario championships, and a fight breaks out,
mm-hmm.
where instead of controlling the situation, teachers on the scene just booted the two kids out of the stadium and the fight escalated. Do you get into this kind of management control where issues break out, you got to do a better job at that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say that whether it's on the field or in the school, we have to treat all situations in the same manner. So just because we're at a field situation with a lot of students that may not know each other and with teacher coaches and coaches that don't know the other students, you have to do your best to rectify it. And if something is subject to additional disciplinary action, then you have to do it. But really, it goes back to the local school. And our expectation of administrators is that we follow up. We don't ignore poor behavior, and we have to deal with it. I mean, it's very unfortunate, the situation at Chaminade, and I know it was dealt with at the local school. But I think part of it, too, is with athletics. It's fairly highly charged. It's very emotional. People put a lot of energy into their work. And, you know, at team sports, you're going one team against another, and things can happen. But certainly we are not going to ignore any type of poor behavior. We have to teach students that, you know, being an athlete, there you have to have self-discipline and respect for yourself and for others.
As somebody who benefited from athletics when you were in high school and now you see students, can we see physical education becoming mandatory again at the high school level?
I'd love to see that, but certainly what we really try to do is promote as many opportunities as we can. I remember growing up, you had local community centers that were very active and had all sorts of programs and your local school and then, of course, organized sports. So there were a lot of opportunities for students to become involved in athletics, and I think we just have to keep supporting that in every way we can.
One thing that really plays a big role in everybody's lives, and that is the word money. Is there sufficient cash at the Toronto Catholic District School Board to ensure that all schools have enough money to maintain athletic programs, varsity, intercollegiate, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a very good question. As you know, well, you may not be aware of the fact that we've just balanced our budget. Next year, we're looking for a modest surplus. And, you know, I've always said to people, conveying a vision for student success doesn't cost a cent. You know, it's about building enthusiasm, motivating others to contribute, to volunteer their skills and energy, and to support youth. So what we do across the city is we provide not only various athletic opportunities in our schools, but pathways for student success so they can achieve their goals. So you can't take these activities for granted. You have to keep talking about it. And in terms of the financial piece, yes, we have capital funds to provide the facilities for kids, but it's also providing opportunities that don't really cost very much money. I'm thinking of Focus on Youth. We also have the Angel Foundation in our board so that no student will not be able to participate in an activity, whether it's athletic or academic. We'll always provide support for those students.
What are your thoughts about kids who are in their fifth year of high school playing sports? Do you think that should be allowed?
In their fifth year?
Fifth year of high school. Kids who have either graduated or come back for that victory lap, they want to play for the team in the fall or whatever it is. Do you think that should be allowed?
Well, I guess I'd have to go to officer rules. I wouldn't know. To me, if it's fair, it's fair for all, that as long as it's within the age range that OFSA supports.
But doesn't this become an issue internally where you have an athlete who wants to progress, maybe move up from the midget team to the junior, then to the senior? They only have 4 years of high school, and they won't get that opportunity to play on a specific team because maybe some hotshot athlete has come back because he or she wants to score more points or for whatever reason. Do you think there should be a cap, 4 years of school, or if you need a fifth year, then you focus on academics but forget about sport?
My personal feeling is that I wouldn't deny any student the opportunity to play in sports.
All right. I just curious about that because I know a lot of people are asking and a lot of people are raising that flag and saying enough is enough. The same way with athletes of the year. Some people think that's passé now, that you're singling out one athlete, male or female or two or three, whatever it is, and maybe all athletes should be recognized at the end of the school year rather than flag one or two.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we even, we have 13 years. We've had our annual mini Olympics. We had over 600 students involved in that as well. So, you know, for us, it's not about just athletic excellence. It's about all students engaged in athletic, healthy living.
And Perron, you did a great job today.
Okay.
I know you're a little nervous about it. We appreciate your time.
Not at all.
I'd promised I wouldn't go into detail on your success at Cathedral as a great basketball player.
Oh, I really enjoyed myself, and I think that's the big part about athletics. It's not just about winning, and it just teaches so many skills which help later in life.
Well, thanks again for your time, and continue supporting athletics and education.
And thank you, too, for everything you do.
Appreciate it. Ann Perron, Director of the Toronto Catholic District School Board. We're going to take a break for a sports update. When we come back, Pat Rutledge, Dr. Ellen Yard, and Rob Ford scheduled up on Sunday mornings with David Grossman on the Fan 590.
It's time for the Dean of College Sports. It's Sunday morning with David Grossman on the Fan 590.
There's no one like you.
Thank you very much. David Grossman with you. Sunday morning, holiday weekend. Hope you're enjoying it. Bundle up, too. 9 degrees outside. Promise it should get warmer. Well, it is September. Back to school in a couple of days. And I want to remind you, fan club members, enter the bonus code ARGO before 9:50 this morning at fan590.com. And you get 590 points and your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Argos play the Bombers. Yeah, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Next Sunday afternoon at the Rogers Center. The code again is ARGO, A-R-G-O, if you don't know how to spell it. Visit fan590.com and enter it in the fan club for your chance to win right now. And I want to thank a couple of our listeners who've written in, sent emails. Jimmy from Brampton writes, great show, glad you're back, and want to know if universities, particularly York and U of T, charge for entrance to their games, or is it free? And he goes on to say they should be free. Well, no, they aren't free. There is an admission charge, but if you are a student, I would imagine there is a reduced rate, if any rate whatsoever. But good idea. You know, maybe they should, as a means of trying to attract fans, and that could do something for the success on the field. They should have free entrance and maybe some half-decent halftime shows. And Lawrence Kay writes from Oshawa. He wants to know why coaches are not certified at high school events. I would imagine what he's trying to say here is that coaches should be certified when supervising a high school team. Very good point. I've mentioned that a few times as well. I think it's very, very important that people who do coach understand a lot of what goes on, and it's not just standing there and barking out instructions or impersonating a coach if you're thinking that you're in the NHL or something like that. You're dealing with young people, and a lot of them want to learn. So thank you very much. Continue, please, if you don't want to call us, to send us a note. It's Sunday morning at fan590.com, or you can call 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590. If you have a cell phone, *590. We'd be glad to talk to you. Or if you just want to leave a couple of messages and not go on the air, that's fine. That's fine. Pat Rutledge is joining us right now. He's been a high school coach, an entrepreneur. He's also a former school trustee with the Toronto District School Board. How are you doing, Pat?
Good morning, David. I'm good.
I haven't spoken to you in a long time.
No, and I've been refreshed because of it.
Okay. Thank you for joining us, Pat. We'll move along right now. What have you been doing?
I've been building a little venture in basketball and literacy for the last 3 years, 4 years. When I left as a trustee in 2006, one of the reasons I didn't run again was I was somewhat disconnected. The last couple of years as a trustee, I wasn't coaching and I wasn't involved as much with kids, and I was kind of disconnected from them.
A lot of people will say you're still disconnected.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I make myself an easy target sometimes. But a principal approached me in 2007 with an idea to help motivate and encourage boys to read. And his idea involved offering them some basketball instruction, an opportunity to play basketball. And we partnered up with, at that time, the Chris Bosch Foundation. And we started this little program called Balls and Books. And from there, it's grown into the DeMar Slam Dunk Book Club with Toronto Raptor DeMar DeRozan coming on board last year as a partner in the program. And I've enjoyed it. It's given me a chance to get back into working with kids. It's given me a chance to give some high school kids an opportunity to work and receive pay for coaching and mentoring kids. We've been running for the last 2-3 years up at North Kipling with the support of Trustee John Hastings. We had 450 kids this past year, mostly boys involved. And what we try and do is we know that they're interested in basketball, they're interested in sports. We offer them the chance to come and learn, play basketball. And at the same time, we require them to read and do book reports. And the program's success is probably because we tell them very clearly that if they want to play, they have to read. The kids have responded greatly. The parents are excited about the program. And because we have high school boys out there on the floor with them coaching and reading with them and sitting down with them for half an hour every Saturday in the program reading with them, the kids are getting, I think, some positive reinforcement from that. And so I've enjoyed doing that, and it's been a fun 3 years.
Do you think these kids can play better than the group that was in Turkey?
Well, one of my major platforms in putting this program together was we wanted to start with, like, our boys are in grade one. That's where they start, grade one to grade six. So we wanted to give them a really good foundation in the skill development of the game. And we also wanted them to understand that there's a lot of life lessons through sports that transcend, you know, the basketball floor. One of the slogans, one of the phrases we use in our program is that practice is to the game what homework is to the test. And we're trying to get the kids to understand if you want to be the best that you can be, you have to practice. If you want to play at the highest levels in the game of basketball, you have to prepare yourself. You have to work hard. And it's no different in school. It's no different in life. If you're not ready to play, if you don't do the work that's required to get you ready to play, you won't be successful. And I think that, you know, when I look at where we are in this sport, I think the next 8 to 10 years are going to prove to be very fascinating, because I think we've laid down the foundation for some really good basketball development. And I think the next 8 to 10 years, we're going to see some things at the national level. And I think it starts with, you know, with the younger kids. We have to give them that foundation and very early on.
Well, Patrick, you don't want to show these young kids the video or any videos of any of those games that occurred in Izmir.
Well,
I mean, zero and five.
I watched some of the games. Like, you know, we've got a ways to go. But, you know, I've always said that, and I think the Vancouver Olympics proved it, we have the athletes in this country. We have the kids who can play.
Pat, come on now. We lost to the Kiwis in New Zealand.
And New Zealand beat some other teams. That they were a bit of a surprise team in this.
I can see losing to Spain. I mean, we got hammered, but I can see losing to Spain. But to go 0-5 at a world championship.
When you lose one of your best players, Andy Routens, when you have three or four players that you kind of hope would be there but weren't there, We're our under 17 team did very well this year. Our youth teams are doing well. As I said, the foundation is there for basketball to be successful. But more importantly, David, I think what we have to start doing in this country is take community and school sports a lot more seriously if we're going to build a foundation of great athletes. And it's being done in other sports. Again, I point to the Vancouver Olympics as an example of that.
What's your perception? I mean, how do you read the state of high school sport in Canada? Or, for that matter, in this large city here of Toronto?
It's in a transition stage.
Oh, boy.
It's in a transition stage. There is an influx, and I know a number of these young teachers because I've worked with them the last couple of years. There is an influx of young, upcoming teachers who want to coach, who want to be coaching, who want to be developing the opportunities for kids at all levels in all sports that are coming.
And there are a lot of them who don't want to coach. They just can't be bothered.
I think part of the problem is they have to have an environment and a culture within the school they're at that encourages them to coach.
Well, a lot of them, I understand. I've talked to some of them.
Yep.
I'll coach. Once they get the job, I'm too busy. I don't want to. Leadership isn't there. I don't really have the great students, nor do I have the time. And these are the people who benefited from other coaches when they were in high school.
No, I disagree with that, David. I don't think that's a large percentage. I think it's a small percentage. And I think that once you get into a school and the culture of the school and the leadership in the school, and I'm talking about the principal, the vice principals, and the coaches who teach already in that school, if they have an environment that's welcoming and warming to new teachers to come in to coach, I think that they will coach. People seem to think, I've been critical of teachers in the past.
If you have
called back
critical.
In 2001,
yep.
When the worked rule was on, I was very critical of the teachers who took away the opportunity for kids to play sports because of that worked rule. But I think, by and large, most teachers that come into the profession want to be involved with kids, want to engage in kids, and if they have an athletic background, want to coach. The thing is, we have to give them an environment that encourages that, that engages them in that, and rewards them for the time and effort they do put into coaching.
So if you're so gung-ho about education, why don't you run for school trustee again?
I'm thinking very seriously about it. As I said, 4 years ago when I left, I was disconnected from kids, I was disconnected from coaching, and I was caught up in the politics of the board a little bit more than I wanted to be. And I was disillusioned, and I wanted to get back into getting connected with kids. In the last 3 years, I've done that. I did some emergency supply teaching in safe schools with a lot of the expelled and suspended kids. And these are kids who athletics actually could save a lot of these kids. If they had an athletic outlet to be involved with, they may not have made the bad decisions that they made and got into the trouble they got into. So the last 3 years, I've been doing that, and I've been sort of energized. I've been energized by what I see Chris Spence doing. As you know, Chris and I worked together for 3.5 years out in Scarborough. I helped promote him to superintendent, and then I think that helped him on his way to becoming director in Hamilton and coming back to Toronto.
Pat, hang on. I'm
seriously thinking about taking a run. I've got till Friday to make that decision.
Well, I know a lot of people would want you to take a run. We'll get back to the part about school trustee in a second. Just hang on a second. I want to go to the phones.
Yep.
Rob's joining us from Toronto. Rob, go ahead.
Hey, David. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Long-time listener and reader of you, and I've always wanted to ask you this question.
Well, thank you very much for supporting us.
No problem. You used to cover my high school baseball team way back in the day, and it's great to talk to you. Question for you. What do you think about the chances of Canadian universities offering full-time athletic scholarships?
Well, a lot of them do.
Canadian universities?
Yeah.
U of T?
Yeah, you're going to have to turn your phone down just a bit there in the back, the radio, I should say. A lot of universities, for that matter, let's leave Ontario out for a second. The rest of the country offered various forms of what they called financial awards, or they didn't want to call them scholarships. And Ontario was the last organization, province, whatever it is, to kick in because they realized a lot of the great athletes were either heading south or going across the country one way or another. So now they do have a system where the first year of tuition is paid for. I know tuition is not a lot of money to some people, but to others it is. First year of tuition is paid for if you have an 80% academic average, and in subsequent years, if it's something like 70%, that award continues on for the duration of your time period. Now, granted, they're restricted. They only have so many of these so-called awards or scholarships, what I still call them, at each university. But Canadian kids, it's probably one of the best-kept secret. Canadian kids who want to stay in this country and go to university and benefit, and they are great athletes, should look into it a little bit better.
You know, David, I consider myself a big sports fan, right, and a fan of amateur sports. And it's funny, the poor advertising the Canadian government or the Canadian universities have done on that fact. I've never heard of such grant.
I agree with you.
And I think that, you know, if we start promoting within, I mean, look at, for example, I mean, hockey's the natural one to pick on. I mean, all of our kids, if they want to play professional hockey, they got to quit school at 18.
Yeah,
they got to go play junior, right? And, you know, take at least a 3 or 4 year hiatus. Basketball is the same thing. If they want to, they'll never progress because the talent pool in the United States is too good, and we just never develop our athletes. Same thing with soccer.
Mm-hmm. Rob, thanks very much for your call. I agree with you. The CIS and, for that matter, the OUA in this province need to do a better job at getting the message out that, yes, there is financial assistance available to some great athletes if they choose and they want to stay in this city, in this province, or in this country. It's a very serious concern. And, Rob, you're not the only one. Pat, let's get back to you. I got a question for you. If you're a principal, what would you look for in a person before, I guess, he or she gets your nod of approval to be a coach?
Well, I look at teaching and coaching as being the same thing. So if I was interviewing somebody for a teaching job, if I was a principal and I was interviewing somebody, one of the questions I would ask them is I would say, if you're going to be coaching kids and you're going to be involved in looking out and being a positive role model for these kids, are you prepared to give them your phone number so that if they get into trouble on the weekend, let's say at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night, you're a person that they can phone and count on being there for them? That's the kind of individual you want. That's the kind of dedication you want from people. And I know a lot of teacher coaches who do that. A lot of the guys that I've been involved with in the Boys to Men program, Boys to Men basketball, these are guys who I know for a fact, if they are involved with kids, those kids know how to reach them if they get into trouble in their off-school hours. And that's something that I think you look for. You look for people who are motivated to see kids at least give themselves the opportunity to be successful. And, I think you can tell that within about, 10 or 15 minutes of talking to someone. If they're into coaching for the right reasons, you know that. If they're just there because they want it as a stepping stone or a resume builder or, they're only interested in winning and not in developing kids, you can see that pretty quickly, too.
Pat, in 10 seconds or less, would you support kids coming back for a fifth year of high school and playing sports?
I support if the circumstances were that kid needed to be engaged in school, and one of the ways that you could keep him engaged in school was with athletics, I'd find a way to do it.
All right. Listen, let us know if you decide you're going to run for school trustee, okay?
I'm 95% there, David.
All right.
Got till Friday to make my mind up. I'm pretty sure I'm going to, but I've just got a couple things that I want to make sure. I want to make sure that DeMar Slam Dunk Book Club can continue. I'm working on building a not-for-profit organization to do that.
All right, you plugged that enough. We're going to have to move along, Pat.
Okay, Dave.
Good luck. Hey, thanks very much for your time. Pat Rutledge, former high school coach, entrepreneur. You heard about it. He was a school board trustee, and he's thinking about doing it again. When we come back after a sports update, we're going to head to Atlanta. Very interesting study that's been completed. We have one of the authors of it as well. Dr. Ellen Yard will join us, researcher with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And we'll talk a little bit about preventing heat-related illnesses with teenage athletes. Stay with us. Sunday morning continues with David Grossman on the Fan 590.
He's our big man on campus. Sunday morning with David Grossman on the Fan 590. Roxanne,
Roxanne. We're back with Sunday morning with me, David Grossman. Hope you're having a great holiday weekend. And if you didn't know, tomorrow is Labor Day. The day after that, back to school, guys. I know. Tough when you're off for 2 months and you got to go back to school. Like school. I heard one kid tell me, I go back to school for a good reason, play sports. Well, let's hope if they do play sports, they take the proper training. I know there are a lot of discussions on concussion rates and it's imperative, I think, for coaches and parents to know the signs of what it's like, particularly in football, when they start banging helmets together. And last week, we had Jim Pounds talk to us a little bit about preparing for contact sports and injuries that young people could suffer without proper training. And then we read more about some of the serious problems that are going on. And like, look at this. Since 1995, so that's, what, 10, 15 years now? More than 30 high school football players have died from heat stroke. And that's according to the National Center for Catastrophic Sports Injury Research. And we're very pleased to have this morning joining us Ellen Yard, who is an epidemiologist with the National Center for Environmental Health at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. And she has her PhD in public health from Ohio State University. She knows a little bit about this subject. I mean, like, quite a bit, because she's authored numerous reports dealing with these national and very serious concerns. And she's also a former athlete playing football and football. Well, we'll find that out. And rugby as well. Ellen, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Let me ask you, you played football?
I did. I played for the Columbus Comets, which is a professional women's football team out of Columbus, Ohio.
And what position?
I was a strong safety.
All right. Did you intercept anything? I mean, like, did you get hit hard?
You know, I was really more of a hitter and a tackler than the fast person that intercepts. So I usually played more of the run defense.
So what do you make of all these serious concerns about heat stroke injuries and those that are leading to death?
Well, I mean, heat illness is certainly a topic that should not be taken lightly. We just did a research study showing that, you know, in addition to the, you know, the athletes that have died the last several years, there's a even greater number of athletes that sustain less serious heat illnesses that still keep them out of play. We just finished an investigation showing approximately 9,000 athletes every year sustain a heat illness that keeps them out of play for at least one day.
Are there similar statistics in Canada?
You know, that's a great question. I'm not sure offhand, but let me take a look at that. May I get back to you?
What are some of the signs of kids who suffer from heat-related illnesses?
Well, so heat illness kind of occurs in a progression. It starts with, you know, simple, mild muscle cramps, dehydration, being very thirsty, sweating profusely, being kind of tired. And it kind of starts at the lower end. And then as it progresses, it can progress very rapidly, you know, into a more serious illness such as heat exhaustion or heat stroke. And once you reach that point, you start to see some of the more mental status changes, maybe nausea, vomiting, perhaps even fainting.
What advice would you give to some of these athletes, or for that matter, parents as well, when their coach or their teacher says, oh, you're just sweating too much, just take it easy for a few seconds, sit down, and then we want you back on the field again?
Yeah, you know, that can be tough when coaches are really, you know, pushing athletes to go 100% all the time. You know, I mean, coaches really need to be aware that, you know, heat illness is something very serious. And, you know, an athlete, you know, it's important for them to know the symptoms, know their body, and, you know, inform their coaches, or if there's any medical staff in the field, if they are experiencing symptoms. You know, if it's just a mild heat illness, just simply staying out of play for a few minutes and rehydrating is all that's needed. But if it becomes more serious, then more quick, advanced treatment is going to be needed.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, I'd be very concerned going back to school with the way that the temperatures were up here in their 30s, et cetera. Now at 10 degrees Celsius, which for you down south of the border is, what, about 50 degrees Fahrenheit or something like that.
Right.
The big concern would probably be frostbite up here. But I would imagine by the time these kids are back in the classroom and get their equipment for whatever sport they choose, and then focusing right now on football, the warm weather is going to be back again. What,
sure.
I mean, should it be mandatory for coaches to understand illnesses and injuries? Should they be trained properly, or is their job specifically to coach a team?
Well, I mean, organizations such as the National Athletic Trainers Association, they definitely recommend that all coaches should be aware of these medical problems. You know, unfortunately, not all sports teams can have an athletic trainer. And so if a team does not have an athletic trainer or a coach or a doctor, then the coach really needs to take that place.
The word prevention, always thrown in when it comes to injuries, et cetera. How would you, or what would you recommend, or ways of preventing heat-related injuries?
Well, you know, the funny thing about heat illness is that really all of them are preventable just by following some simple steps. You know, we recommend that coaches be aware of the guidelines that the National Athletic Trainers Association has. You know, kind of starts off with at the very beginning of the season, especially if it's a hot season, make sure that the athletes get properly acclimated to the heat. So this means over a 1 or 2 week period, gradually increasing the intensity, the duration, and the frequency of practices. That's key. You know, also just monitoring the local weather conditions. And if it's a really hot or humid day, you might have to restrict activity, or you might have to just increase the frequency of your water and your rest breaks.
Joining us is Ellen Yard, a researcher with the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and that's based in Atlanta, of course. Were you surprised by some of these statistics that you were able to, I guess, come up with in the research?
Yeah, we were surprised that, 9,000 athletes a year that are kept out of play for at least one day for heat illness is quite high, especially when they're preventable.
Are there certain sports where these illnesses, is it predominantly football, or are we looking at soccer as well, maybe rugby?
You know, as we expected, we did see the majority of heat illness in high school football, but that's also because that's where the majority of, athletes are. You know, high school football athletes start at the hottest time of the season. You know, we did see heat illness in all sports, so it is important to remember that they can occur in other sports. We did not look at rugby, so I'm not quite sure how that would compare with football.
There are a lot of people who say, you know, before you play your first game, whether it's outdoors or indoors, girls basketball, volleyball, or for that matter, the outdoor sports, there is a specific period of time, whether it's 10 days or 2 weeks, to get climatized, to get used to the weather, to get used to the contact that goes on in sports as well. How do you react to something like that? Do you think they should first day back, get on those pads and go out to practice?
You know, we definitely agree that, you know, all athletes need, 10 or 14 days to just kind of acclimatize to not just the heat, but also just, as you said, the contact, and, learn the basics. You know, take those 2 weeks to really, gradually get into the sport, and that's going to decrease your injury rate all season long.
Did you find in the research that coaches are, I guess, if not being trained, have people who are with them who are trained to deal with these various forms of heat-related problems?
Yeah, that's a great topic, and unfortunately, we really couldn't assess that. You know, there's no great statistics on how many schools have athletic trainers available to assist coaches. It's probably only about half.
Were you able to find out if these illnesses or these, I guess, depending on how you want to define it, heat-related illness or heat-related injury, the heat strokes, et cetera, is it more so the guys, or are we seeing it with the girls?
You know, we're seeing it with both genders. Yeah, again, we did see it a little bit more often with football, but, boys and girls are equally as susceptible to heat-related illness.
Is there significant pressure? Are you hearing in cases in certain states where parents are getting a little ticked off with the fact that the schools and coaches are stressing more of the sport rather than injury prevention?
You know, our research didn't specifically look at that, so I can't quite comment on that.
All right. What about the importance, though, of proper hydration before and during and all this strenuous activity? How much are they stressing that in school systems and athletic associations around the U.S.?
You know, I don't quite know how much they're stressing it, but they, of course they should be stressing it a lot. You know, proper hydration is one of the keys to preventing heat illness, and you're correct that you need to be properly hydrated both before, during, and after the events. You know, if you have an athletic trainer, they can be kind of monitoring how much the athletes are consuming. You can also monitor your body weight every day to see if it's changing by more than 2%, then you need to get more fluids into you.
If you have any questions for Dr. Ellen Yard, a researcher from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is in Atlanta, give us a call at 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or on your cell phone at *590. I remember when I was in school, and that goes back a long time, I mean, like a long time, I would always hear the coach screaming and yelling, drink plenty of water. I mean, drink it. The problem with me is I was drinking so much water, I had to go to you know where. Anyway, now we get a variety of sports beverages on the market to replace or try to replace water, et cetera. Can you comment a bit, without endorsing names, et cetera, can you comment a bit about whether people should still be drinking water, or are some of these energy drinks the solution to dealing with a lot of this heat pressure and stress that goes on?
Well, you know, a lot of the research out there has shown that in exercises and activities that last only 1 or 2 hours, that water is completely sufficient. When you have activities that are going beyond 2 hours, you can see a lot of benefit by having drinks that contain electrolytes and carbohydrates. Another benefit of them is just that they taste good. And they have shown that athletes, you know, if they're presented with flavored sports beverage, they do tend to consume a lot more of it than if they're just drinking water. So in that regard, they are very helpful.
We talked about football players and 31 of them dying from heat stroke. Can you share with us some of the other sports and some of the concerns you were able to find out in this research?
Well, you know, our research did not specifically look at the heat stroke deaths. But, you know, I mean, we had just, we found, you know, we actually looked at 9 different sports. We looked at football, soccer, boys and girls soccer, boys and girls basketball, volleyball, baseball, softball, you know, to see that on average it's about 9,000 players a year. We did see that they're most common in August, which was not surprising because that is the most hot, you know, the hottest and the most humid time of the year.
We're talking about... Ellen, I'm sorry.
I'm
sorry. We're talking about high school here. Is there anything that supports some kind of similarity to concerns at the elementary school level?
You know, there's no reason to think that they'd be any different, although I'm not quite sure if anyone's looked at these among the elementary level yet. But, you know, I'm sure the same problems likely exist there as well.
Does the center provide any kind of documentation that is shared with those in the educational sector, be it throughout the U.S. or, for that matter, for Canadians who might want to tap into learning more and sharing that, passing the message across?
Yeah, you know, I would definitely recommend that all coaches and athletes and parents and anyone concerned, you know, if you go to the National Athletic Trainers Association website, which is www.nata.org, and if you type the phrase heat illness into the search box, it really pulls up a wealth of information that, you know, all of our, you know, our research just simply stresses the fact that these guidelines need to be followed.
How do you react to people who say, oh, a lot of this stuff is just exaggerated nonsense?
Well, you know, unfortunately, the fatalities would say otherwise.
What about some of the other illnesses that occur as a result of heat stroke?
Yeah, I mean, you know, 9,000 athletes a year is a huge number, and I'm sure it's, you know, also quite high in Canada. And, you know, that's evidence right there that, you know, if you're having to miss time from your sport to deal with a heat illness, it's better to prevent it in the first place so that you don't have to get off the field.
Those numbers, 9,000 and the 30-odd deaths that occurred specifically for football players, how does that compare to 10 years ago or 20 years prior to that?
I think that it has been increasing slightly. The fatalities, because there's not that many per year, it's hard to really see trends over time. But I believe it's been slightly increasing.
Dr. Ellen Yard, you do some excellent work. We appreciate very much your time this morning on this holiday weekend of joining us and discussing what is a very important, very sensitive subject, and that is being careful. And as a student, as an athlete, for that matter, as a parent or a coach, teacher, making sure that when they go out and they participate, kids, of course, are very well protected. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Dr. Ellen Yard with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention based in Atlanta. Just another factor, I would think, as kids prepare to go back to school, parents, coaches, et cetera, take the proper precautions, go out, have some fun, of course, learn, but at the same time, protection, very, very important. And as this warmer weather continues and comes back with us, Be prepared. Drink a lot of water. Drink a lot of beverages and stay hydrated. When we come back after the break, Rob Ford. It's a name common to many in the city of Toronto. He's a politician, businessman, a person who loves football, but also cares about coaching kids, which he has done at high schools in the city. He's going to join us. That's coming up next. Sunday morning with David Grossman, the holiday weekend version on the Fan 590.
It's time for the Dean of College Sports. Attendance will be taken. It's Sunday morning with David Grossman on the Fan 590.
And if you're like me, you'd be in the corner of the classroom Monday to Friday. I couldn't figure out why teachers put me in the corner. I thought I had a front row seat, but it was the wrong corner. I was a good guy. Anyway, several people want to be mayor of Toronto. And no, I am not announcing today that I'm going to be mayor. I don't even want that. But the voters of this city, they're going to decide next month who will be mayor of the city of Toronto. And we're going to leave politics aside and all these campaign pledges as well and focus a little bit about the kind of work that some of these candidates do in the community and specifically with sports and with young people. And I put the question to the staff and the campaign offices of the leading five candidates. And George Smitherman and Rocco Rossi did some kind of work with young people, according to their staff. But I asked them specifically what it was, and they weren't clear, and they said they'd get back to me. And I did offer them an opportunity to talk about what they do with young people, but they never emailed back, and they didn't even call back. And I asked Sarah Thompson's staff as well and Joe Pantalone, but I didn't even get a reply. Doug Ford did call back, and he's the brother of Rob Ford. And Rob Ford is on the phone right now. Rob, good morning, sir.
Good morning, David.
Now, you were an athlete at school. Some will argue. Some will say no. Forget it. He impersonated an athlete. What made you want to start up programs and coach football at high schools in Toronto? I mean, you're an entrepreneur. You're a politician. When do you have time to do this kind of stuff?
Well, I just saw the benefits of football. And football gets kids off the street. And in the case in Rexdale, they get them out of gangs. And in the Jade Finch area, in the Malvern area, it's the same thing. Kids are in gangs, and they're running with the wrong crowd, and they're not going to school. And I thought, if you let them play football, they're going to school, they're getting an education. And, at the end of the day, kids that would never thought of going to university are now in university. Some kids are on scholarships in the States, and it's because of football. And when I'm the coach at Don Bosco, I tell them one thing. They said, "What's that, coach?" I said, "You have to go to class or you're not playing in the game." And you know what? They're learning, and the parents are, they come up to me, they're in tears. They said, "I've never seen my son work so hard just to play a sport." And in turn, their grades are 70s and 80s, and when university coaches start calling them, they say, "Wow, this is unbelievable. People actually care about me." And there's hundreds of success stories that I've experienced coaching these young men. And it's magic. It really is how football turns these people's and these families' lives around.
With school policies about ethics and about equality, and with Toronto being a multicultural society now, quite a bit different from what it was 10, 15 years ago. What does the word discipline mean to you, Rob, in getting players to respect you as a coach and a teacher of the game?
Now, that's what they want. A lot of these, when I say 3 o'clock, our practice starts at 3. It doesn't start at 5 after 3. The kids don't come sauntering in like it's a country club at, quarter after 3. It starts at 3. They're there at 3. And I tell them, in real life, you just can't show up to a job whenever you want. If, the boss tells you to start at 3, you'd be there at 3. And they listen to it, and they respect it. And sometimes it's, in some cases, it's the first time they've had any discipline in life.
Now, I've seen you coach, Rob. I really have. And it's the first time I've seen a high school coach in a suit. But it's no secret that you have a passion for the game. I mean, you also, let's be fair, you got a temper.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you want kids to learn. And you also want them to win games. And you're what I think some people like to call an aggressive coach. And you like to sort of get in the face of players when a game is on the line or a player makes a mistake. How do you respond to people who say that you're a bit too harsh at a high school level?
That's completely false. I get the best out of my players. The players play with passion, and we've won three championships in a row, and everyone says, well, you know, it's not the most important thing is not winning. Well, you go out and play a football team and get drilled 55-0 after practicing every single night, and you tell me, is that enjoyable? The kids don't enjoy getting, you know, beat 55-0 like used to, like we used to when I started the program at Bosco 6-7 years ago. But you know, when you work together every night, you're on time. It's a family atmosphere. They support each other off the field, doing homework together. You know, they go to movies together. It just becomes a family atmosphere, and the kids love to see each other get ahead. So when one university coach calls, the whole change room, well, did you hear about the University of, you know, so-and-so called me, and, you know, and then it just it filters through. So it's infectious. The kids just thrive off of each other, and they all benefit at the end of the day. And if someone says, oh, I have to get my assignment done, you'd be surprised how some of the senior players help with the junior players so just so they can play the game. Because coach Ford, if the homework's not done, if they're, you know, if I'm not in class, we're not playing. But you have to have that. You have to have the rules, and education comes first, and these kids respect it. And like I said, it turns, I've seen hundreds of examples, David, where it's turned lives around, turned these kids from gangbangers into scholars.
If you have a question for Rob Ford, Coach Rob Ford, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590. And we're talking about Rob Ford, the mayoralty candidate who is also a coach at Don Bosco High School. I'm sure you pulled aside players for a talk. As a matter of fact, I've seen it a few times before. Were there any, or were there any parents who actually took time to say anything to you after a game, Rob, or actually maybe after the season, when a lot of these kids move on for whatever reason, either about your involvement or your commitment, or for that matter, the way you communicate with the with teenagers?
Well, David, it's like I've coached hundreds of kids. I coached back in the early 90s at Scarlet Heights, and then I went up to Newton Brook, and like I said, I think for the past 8-9 years I've been at Don Bosco, and it's just thanks. That's all it is. It's a parents come up to me, give me a big hug, and say, I can't thank you enough. And, you know, so do the kids. It gets emotional. You know, they start crying, and I start crying because I see kids from, you know, grade 9 that are totally out. And I'm talking 14-year-old kids are in gangs, and, you know, they're in jail. And I get them out of that situation, and I put them on a positive pursuit in life. And I get them education, get them into university, get them a scholarship in the United States. And they're just like, if it wasn't for you, coach, you know, I don't know where I'd be. And many, many kids have come up and said that. And a lot of parents have come up and said, you saved my son's life. I can't thank you enough. I said, you don't have to thank me. This is what I love to do. And it's one success story after another. And I'll continue to do it no matter if I'm there or not. We're going to always have my foundation going. And I've started up programs in Westview, CW, Jeffries, at Eastern Commerce, all over the place.
Rob, hang on the phone. Hang on, we got a caller coming in. John from Toronto. Good morning, sir. What's on your mind?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Great, great. Good luck to you, Rob, and
thanks
for upcoming mayoral debate there.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering who your biggest rival is in football. Do you guys think you're going to repeat this year?
No, I guess it was Richie before, and we beat Richie. I'd say probably St. Mike's are we've beaten every team in Toronto besides probably St. Mike's and Northern. We have only played Northern once, so it's not a real rivalry, but we'd like to beat them. But every other team, maybe Birchmount, Northern, and St. Mike's, I guess, are our top three. The kids really want to get at these these three teams. So
thank you, John, for your call. I would imagine Chaminade's listening to this right now, coach, and they're probably wondering that you've just, you know, wiped them off the map already. You haven't even played them in a game.
They have a very good program, and I give credit to Coach Diodati at Chaminade, and they're always a respectable team. But like I said, we've beaten them. We want to play teams that we haven't beaten. Birchmount's always given us a tough time, and same with Northern, and same with St. Mike's. So the kids are really looking for. They're eyeing those teams that they want to.
Rob Ford, I'm going to use some football language here. Okay,
yeah.
You've been basically drop kicked. You've been pancaked for improper use of influence and soliciting donations for your football charity, the one that's helping to bring football back to a lot of high schools. Some teachers who also coach are just flat outright jealous of you and your success as a coach. And they've accused you of being too harsh with some players and a football official, who's also a retired teacher, publicly was quoted as saying, impassionate outbursts at students have made you a questionable role model for young people. Do you think this is fair?
No, not at all. It's why don't you talk to the kids of every single kid, and I mean every single one. We've gotten along great. Obviously, you know, it's a passionate game. Kids start yelling, and coaches yell, and, you know, I've never laid a hand on a kid when I've coached them. All I've done is help them out, and it's really, I feel terrible when officials from the league comment about that or make comments about me. It's just it's not fair. It's not true, and I really don't have much respect for people that say that.
The principal of Sir Sanford Fleming Academy was on this show last week, Arnold Witt, and he was saying how much of a pleasure it was for you to kickstart the program at his school. But he also liked the camaraderie that you had with a lot of his kids. And Sam Michelli, the principal at Eastern Commerce, basically said the same thing. You've been coaching at Bosco now for, what, 7 years?
Yeah, I think 7 or 8 years.
And the recent principal, Hugo Rossi, has gone on record and praised you.
Right.
And yet there are others, for some reason, who claim you're a bully. It's okay. I mean, people claim that I'm a bully, too. And they say that you may have a split personality, like a Jekyll and Hyde. How do you react to this kind of stuff?
I just look at, you know, I feel sorry for those people that are saying that. I wish they did as much work as I did, and I just ignore it. I just look out for the best interest of the kids, and like I said, Downsview is Mother Teresa. They're waiting for some foundation money. They're in line at Thistletown. So there's like 3 or 4 schools, Albert Campbell out in Scarborough, they've approached me. So I think this fall we're going to start off another 3 or 4 programs, and I'm going to keep soliciting funds for my foundation. You get a tax receipt, and I just want to see kids play football, and more importantly, I want to see them get an education, and the way they get an education is playing football, and it's a win-win situation for everyone, David.
Rob Ford's with us, Coach Rob Ford, who might have a bit of a reputation for being controversial and penny-pinching. At Toronto City Hall, but apparently he's got a little bit of a Santa Claus in him as well, because he likes to help participate and donate money and ask others to donate as well. Let's assume, Rob, let's assume that you're successful at becoming mayor. How much time do you have? I mean, are you committed to still coaching these kids if you're still mayor?
It's going to be very difficult, but I'm guaranteed that in Bosco, I've already got plans in place. Coaches have, you know, already lining up to take my place, and I've always said the kids will come first, and if I have time, that's great. But obviously, when I'm mayor, it's going to be a little bit more difficult. But if I make the time, I will. But right now, I can't say yes or no. So, but guaranteed, Don Bosco football will continue, and it's going to continue this year for sure. I'm going to keep coaching and campaigning at the same time. But when I become mayor, it might be a little bit more challenging. But like I said, I have tons of volunteer coaches. A lot of teachers will come forward now and are willing to coach. So It's starting to you know, turn the corner, and no matter what school I start up, I always make sure there's coaches in place, and there will always be coaches as long as Rob Ford's alive, let me tell you.
There are reports all over the place claiming that when you coached football at Newton Brook Secondary, remember that, a long time ago?
Yeah, well,
you had the Lastman Bowl. You had Mel Lastman up there to kick the ball. I don't ever think he did, but he was there. But there were reports saying that you had a confrontation with a player over his poor performance on the field. And there were others that claim that, that this was false. It's basically concocted by some unnamed people.
Mm-hmm.
People listening in right now are wondering, who's right?
Well, I you know what? Unfortunately, the Toronto Star outright lied and wrote a story saying I committed a criminal act, meaning I abused a player, I hit a player. And the player himself came right out. His name is Jonathan Gordon, and he's given me permission to use his name. He said, absolutely not. Coach Ford has never, ever laid a hand on any player, including myself, and you know, that's it. And unfortunately, the Toronto Star wrote a story that was not true. And now, obviously, it's in my lawyer's hands. And that's it. And I've never, ever sued a newspaper or any media outlet, but I can't sit back and have people accuse me of committing a criminal act, David. So that's where it stands right now.
How are the Eagles doing, the Don Bosco
Eagles?
We're
doing well. We're doing really well. We're going to be playing our first game a week Thursday up at Esther Shiner against Brock. And we're looking forward to a good year. We're going to have a great bunch of kids coming back, and I just can't wait to get out there with them.
Well, good luck to you.
Thanks a lot, David.
I mean on the football field, too. Thanks very much for your time, and we very much appreciate what you do to help high school football in the Toronto schools, Rob.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot, David.
Rob Ford, a name common to many in the city of Toronto, and yes, a politician, that's him, and a businessman, and a person who is really caring, devoted to football. and to maintaining success with a lot of these kids. It's not always winning a championship. You have to see the fact that a lot of these kids may not get a chance. And now with the help of coaches all over the place and the support of administrations and, for that matter, boards of education and funding and assistance, they're able to do it. So congratulations to Rob and others. And we thank him very much for joining us. Yeah, we promised we'd have a winner announced, and we do. Dan, is it Fuoco? Fuoco. Okay, Dan Fuoco from Woodbridge is the winner. My apologies, Dan, but he is the winner of two tickets to see the Argos and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers on Sunday, September the 19th at the Rogers Center, the winner of our bonus code. And, of course, the word was Argo. I want to thank our guests today, Nate Sager from Ottawa and Perron, the director of the Toronto Catholic District School Board, who joined us a bit to talk about her priorities when it comes to athletics and education, and Richard Jung, the outstanding 17-year-old student who likes to golf and golf and golf. And next week he'll be on his way to England and then to Argentina. Somehow will finish his high school education and then move on from there. Pat Rutledge gave us the impression he wants to return to the Toronto District School Board as a trustee, and I think he's going to be formally announcing that soon. But his concerns and his support of basketball in the school system, anything to help Canada do better than it did just recently in Turkey. And fortunate to have Ellen Yard join us as well, researcher with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention based in Atlanta, pinpointing and outlining the concerns about heat-related illnesses with teenage athletes and the fact that in the past 15 years, 30 kids have died in the United States from that. And Rob Ford as well was with us, and we thank him for our support. The production team, Josh Goldsmith and Joe Cecilia, gentlemen, thank you very much. Hope you have a great holiday weekend. Thank you very much for joining us on Sunday Morning with David Grossman. We'll see you next Sunday on The Fan 590.